you for sticking with us. We had some technical difficulties. I don't know, huge outage everywhere. So across all of our major platforms, something happened to the servers. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, we're here and we've got a lot of news to get to here on your Wednesday. So thank you for sticking with us. Really appreciate that. We're going to talk about the election night results last night and why now there's a lot of postmortems happening in the mainstream media right now, but they're all really avoiding, I think, one of the biggest issues right now. We're going to tackle that. Why did Democrats win so big? Why did Republicans get hammered? And is this a harbinger of things to come for maybe J.D. Vance trying to run for president a number of years from now? We're going to look at all of that today.
Or is this just playing fools for us? Because this is a cycle. If you're an adult now, you've been through it. You vote for someone, they disappoint you. You switch to the other party, they disappoint you. How many times are we going to do this before we realize it's a uniparty? I'm just curious. Ring in on that. We're also going to talk about war with Russia because we have a guest who says that it is too late for a peace treaty with Russia. That ship has sailed. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about a new study that shows that suicide prevention for young people doesn't work. So maybe we should leave them the F alone. What do you say? I'm going to show you some data on that.
Also, we're going to talk about Ben Shapiro, Tucker Carlson, the gloves are off, the new war sort of inside the conservative movement right now. Not a new war, but now it's just exploded. And finally, Ben Shapiro is finally acknowledging or having actually using the words Nick Fuentes when he's actually talking about him. I think the gloves are off. And this is a big moment, I think, for people in the conservative movement to pay attention to. So we're going to look at all of that and the explosion that's just happened over the past 24 hours. We get to all of that today on the show. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends at American Financing, because the Fed just dropped interest rates again. And that's great news for American homeowners, because if you're feeling overwhelmed, thinking about the holidays coming up, there's no better time than now to get your finances in order. It's time to think about the holidays. And it's tough when everything's, you know, your credit cards are high, all the expenses, all the teacher gifts, the meals, everything. With rates dropping, though, now is the time to pay off that debt, not create more. American Financing is helping homeowners access the equity in their home for instant savings. They're saving people just like you an average of $800 a month. Many are seeing rates in the low fives. That's a game changer compared to those teen level interest rate credit cards. And if you start today, you may be able to delay two mortgage payments over the holidays. Come on, think of the breathing room that could give you. And it costs absolutely nothing to just learn this. So the holidays are going to be here before you know it. Don't wait. Call their salary-based mortgage consultants today at American Financing at 866-890-8434. One more time, that's 866-890-8434, or go to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted.
Well, it's been a remarkable night to watch all of the sort of hand-wringing from Fox News and other Israel-first news outlets as to how in the world did a Muslim become the next mayor of New York City. Why did so many New York Jews vote for a Muslim socialist, Zohran Mamdani, and not vote for a grandma killer, Andrew Cuomo? It's an interesting question. Almost 70% of young New York City Jews voted for a Muslim mayor who vowed to divest from Israel instead of focusing on New York City. Mamdani literally said he was concerned about Israel. He wasn't concerned about Israel. He's concerned about New York. Watch.
Mayor Adams just signed this deal between New York City and Israel to launch this New York City-Israel Economic Council to strengthen economic ties between the two. Would you consider that council? Would you continue it?
I think that what we need is a mayor who is squarely focused on the affairs of New York City.
He's looking for an economic tie here. So you're saying that it's a no, you would not consider it. Politics aside of what Eric Adams is trying to do, is it a good idea to have this partnership with Israel for the economic ties?
That's not something that I would pursue.
Okay.
Overall, a third of New York City Jews voted for a Muslim who's not really interested in Israel at all. According to the exit polling, older Jews voted for Cuomo, who's cozy with Netanyahu, of course. Mamdani, by the way, who is cozy with the Soros family. So I guess pick your poison, really. So in the end, it was the Jewish vote that really carried Mamdani into office. Remember during the New York City mayor's debate, as reporter Glenn Greenwald reminded me, one of the most interesting moments came when all of the candidates were asked which country they would visit first when they became mayor of New York City. What other country will you go to after you become mayor of New York City? And the only one who said, I'm not going anywhere, I'm going to stay here in New York, was Mamdani. Watch.
The first foreign visit by a mayor of New York is always considered significant. Where would you go first? Left to right, Ms. Adams.
First visit, I would visit the Holy Land.
Mr. Cuomo?
Given the hostility and the anti-Semitism that has been shown in New York, I would go to Israel.
Mr. Tilson, where would you go?
Yeah, I'd make my fourth trip to Israel, followed by my fifth trip to Ukraine, two of our greatest allies fighting on the front lines of the global war on terror.
Mr. Mamdani.
I would stay in New York City. My plans are to address New Yorkers across the five boroughs and focus on that.
Mr. Mamdani, can I just jump in? Would you visit Israel?
No,
as mayor?
I will be doing, as the mayor, I'll be standing up for Jewish New Yorkers, and I'll be meeting them wherever they are across the five boroughs, whether that's in their synagogues and temples or at their homes or at the subway platform, because ultimately we need to focus on delivering on their concerns.
And just yes or no, do you believe in a Jewish state of Israel?
I believe Israel has the right to exist.
Not
as a Jewish state?
As a state with equal rights.
He won't say it has a right to exist as a Jewish state.
And his answer was no, he won't visit Israel.
I said that.
That's what he was trying to say.
Unlike you, I answered very directly.
He literally said that right at the beginning. No, I won't go to Israel. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to stay right here at home. But anyway, nevertheless. So Patriotic Blonde put up this poll a short time ago. Why do you think the Republicans lost so badly last night? Overwhelming response from those polls. I mean, normally you get a poll of about 1,000 people. This has almost 4,000 people. Israel first policies was the answer. Thomas Massie, Congressman Thomas Massie, posted this. To avoid a repeat of last night's shellacking in the 2026 midterms, Republicans should quit covering for pedophiles, put America before Israel, put farmers before corporations, quit funding wars abroad, reduce spending to control inflation, and quit attacking independent voices.
I thought that was the platform that they ran on in 2024, if I'm recalling correctly. Mm. I was here. I go here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So joining us to discuss this pendulum switch or something, we're going to see what we think it is collectively, is Dan McAdams.
Dan, great to see you.
Hello. Good to see you guys again.
All right, so what do you make of this this election right now? And do you agree that Republicans are pissed and they see that they have not been given the wishes that they voted for in 2024?
Well, I swear when you ran that last clip, I thought it was that famous Saturday Night Live.
I thought so, too.
Clip that didn't run. I literally thought that's what it was. And I mean, it's very clear. Mamdani said something different. Everyone else said the exact same thing. This isn't rocket science. Here's someone who's different. Now, all the things that they say about him, and even all the things that I think a lot of voters who are concerned about our Middle East policy or maybe pro-Muslim voters are about to be disappointed. I'm just like the Palestinians were when they celebrated the election of Obama, who proceeded to bomb them for 8 years. So all of the crazy stuff about him is I'm sure, is way exaggerated. I'm sure he's going to do some stupid things. That's what they do in politics. But I think it does. Absolutely. It's a thermometer. It's a barometer of the shifting tone, the shifting level of interest in the American people on this administration's policies. And it's reflected in recent polls. A poll came out, a CNN poll that they've been doing every month came out, I think 2 days ago, yesterday. It showed the lowest support for president, lowest approval rate. I think it was 37%. The last one in July was 41%. But here's something important, guys. When they looked at the 18 to 29, it was down to 27%. That's an 11-point drop from February. So clearly, President Trump had a lot of support from young people early on. The things that he was saying, the DOGE, the focusing on the economy. And what did they get for it? They got Lindsey Graham and they got Marco Rubio. And they're saying, that's it. We're sick of it. We don't want it anymore.
Yeah, I thought particularly the young people vote here, Dan, was really unbelievable. So among young people, I mean, they overwhelmingly voted for him. They overwhelmingly voted for Mamdani, and they also, the young Jewish vote, like I said, 70% of Jews, young Jews, voted for Mamdani. And I just want to play this for you. This is a group of Orthodox Jews, and they were there saying exactly, because people are like, why would Jews vote for Mamdani? They answered it. They said exactly why they were voting. Well, listen.
My name is Rabbi David Feldman. I'm with Neturei Karta International. We are standing here on the steps of New York City City Hall. And we are here while we are unfortunately seeing this terrible intimidation against candidate for mayor here in the city, Mr. Mamdani. And this is disturbing to so many Jewish people. This harassment and these intimidations is about his brave stance, the speaking up to what he believes is right, and he is speaking up against the crimes being committed to the Palestinian people. Now, they are condemning him as anti-Semitic because he is against the state of Israel. This is misleading, this is unjust, and this is dangerous. We need politicians to be on the right side of history and to speak up for the oppressed. We as New Yorkers, we as citizens of the United States, we should admire brave politicians, and we should give them the freedom to express what they believe is right. And we encourage people, voters, to vote what is in the interest of our city and not in the interest of a foreign country, the state of Israel, and certainly not in the interest of crimes being committed to the other side of the world. Wow. We as Jewish people say.
So, Dan, I mean, people are like, well, a lot of hand-wringing. Like, why would they do that? Why would they do that? Well, they just said it.
It's a racist question. Again, like, why do black people vote Republican? I reject it, but let's discuss it anyway.
Yeah, it's a great group. They supported Dr. Paul's presidential campaigns, the same group. And, you know, and they're written off as, oh, they're crazy. They're a bunch of crazies. Well, look what President Trump said on the eve of the election. Any Jews in New York who vote for him are idiots. I mean, that's not very smart. That's not a very smart way of doing things. And what did the young Jews say? They said, okay, you call us idiots, we're going to be idiots. We're going to vote for Mamdani. Now, I don't think he's as anti-Israel as our rabbi friend would say, would have claimed. We did see that picture of him with Alex Soros. So I don't think he's in any way anti-Jewish or anti-Semitic. But nevertheless, this is reflected. America has seen for the past couple of years, intensifying this year under the Trump administration, a real genocide live streamed. And now when the temporary ceasefire has taken place, we've seen even more video from inside of Gaza, and we've seen what's happened in America. And thankfully, the American right and the American Christian right, to a larger degree than ever in the past, have said enough is enough. Now, they may want to protect Christians more in the area. That's fine. But the fact of the matter is, while we're seeing Christians persecuted in places like Gaza, we're seeing President Trump meeting with Jolani, the head of Al-Qaeda in Syria, who's now the self-appointed president of Syria, a guy who personally, when he became self-appointed president, the first thing he did was start killing a bunch of Christians. So people aren't stupid. They see what's going on.
But part of me feels like that's cute, you know, your first time being disappointed by your vote, like so many of us have been for decades. So how long until we learn that, you know, the party that you have hope for is going to let you down? You may then go to the other party. They're going to let you down. Something that, who was it, Scott Horton recently said, partisan politics demeans us all. What do we do now? I mean, are we going to let our kids go through this flip-flop like we have?
Well, it's a tough decision. I made the decision many years ago, back in 2002, that I wouldn't vote anymore, and I stopped voting then. So my solution to the problem that you very, very adeptly explain is that I'm out. You know, I'm not going to play Tweedledee and Tweedledum anymore. There was a theoretical time that I may vote again. In fact, when RFK announced and I started seeing some of the things he was saying from the beginning about with the COVID, I thought he was going to be good, but then he imploded on foreign policy. And I said, ooh, I don't have to vote now. I can keep my record up. But the last person I voted for was Jim Webb in Virginia, a Democrat, a blue-collar Democrat conservative from Virginia, who unfortunately didn't win. He was a great person, in my opinion. It's the game is over, I think. And I just don't see, you know, you're going to get let down, like you say.
Yeah.
You know, I look at J.D. Vance. There's this rift. You see, like, Laura Loomer out there, and she was saying, you know, you've got to distance yourself, J.D. Vance. You've got to distance yourself from Tucker Carlson. Otherwise, you're not going to win the 2028 election. And then many others saying, no. And the position I have is that if J.D. Vance really wants to, like, win maybe in a landslide, it's to disavow all of this foreign money in our government and to take a stand. Because you'd have hundreds of millions of Americans who would find, like, you would be like, I'm going to vote for this guy finally. They would come out of the woodwork. The 100 million Americans that don't vote because they're so disillusioned by the Uniparty, they would say, wait a minute, they're actually going to take a stand against this? Where do you come down on that? I mean, the J.D. Vance question, the sort of rift right now, you got to disavow these Tucker Carlsons.
Yeah, I don't trust him. I wouldn't believe J.D. Vance. He's on the team right now, and he put out kind of a desperate post on X today saying, listen, guys, this is what we need to do. It's not convincing anymore. I'll tell you what would make me jump out of my seat and re-register and vote, and that'd be if Thomas Massie ran. I would do it in a second. And I think a lot of America would, because a lot of America understands, here's a guy who's not motivated by hate. He's not motivated by prejudice. He's not in it for the money. He's got plenty of money. He's not in it because he loves D.C., because he hates D.C. He's in it because he loves America. And that would get a lot of people. And that may not be enough, because he would have the entirety of the media against him on the left and the right, and they would all call him all sorts of names. But people like us who are disgusted, they would be likely to vote for someone who you know is going to tell the truth. He's always told the truth. The entire time he's been in office, he's told the truth.
Yeah.
And President Trump is going to campaign against him and campaign for Lindsey Graham. So that tells you everything you know. People right. are sick of President Trump doing boneheaded things. We've had enough of it.
Yeah. What do you make of Democrats who might be taking a victory lap? What is their policy? Because Democrats still have a high unfavorability rating. I think they just sort of caught the fruit that was fallen from the tree. No one seems to be riled up about what Democrats' platform is, because we don't know what the hell it is.
It's free stuff.
Yeah, no, they don't have a platform, and they don't care that they don't have a platform, because what will make all the difference in the midterms is not what the Democrats offer. It's going to be people who were motivated by Trump, people who hadn't voted in a while, young people who hadn't voted at all and they don't vote, minorities who voted in record numbers for President Trump. These are the people who are going to be, okay, we trusted it again. We tried to kick the football game. We landed up on our ass, so we're going to go home. We're not going to go out. That's going to be the difference this time. There was a very small, relatively small group of the electorate who got President Trump elected. They wanted DOGE. And what did they get? The middle finger. They wanted yeah. no foreign wars. What did they get? We're going to invade Venezuela, for God's sake. Why? Nobody knows. Maybe even Colombia. We're blowing up boats in the water. We don't know who's in them. And nobody seems to care. That's what we're getting. We're getting President Trump, who stands up in front of the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, and says, I've got donors who tell me what they want, and they want me to do stuff for Israel, and I'm happy to do it, and I don't care. Screw America. People aren't stupid.
Yeah. Clayton spoke to a group of young people this morning who had, a more conservative bent, and they were enthusiastic about politics. And I think to myself, they can do it. When you see this enthusiastic cloud and they understand foreign influence, they understand the need for small g government, what's going to stop them? Because the people in power, the deep state, will try to manipulate them from the dream that was Rome, to borrow from Gladiator.
Well, the problem is, if Ron Paul was here in the room with us right now, and others would say it's because government is too big. It does too much. And when it's sitting there hanging out in front of you, you're going to start playing with the levers of it. You're going to want to try the ring on. You want to try it on. Hey, I can use it for good. Just let me try it on. That's what the problem is. The problem is the ring itself.
Mm. Oh, that's so powerful. It really is. It is like Lord of the Rings. Don't put it on. We could all learn something from George Washington, who, made sure that really led us down that road of saying, don't try it on. Don't put it on. Like, that's not why we're here as a nation. We need to get back to that. That's actually part of what I talked about this morning, actually, with these young conservatives. So, Dan, great to see you. Thank you so much for this. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch in this, as we approach the full-on midterms here, how this will all play out and where the money will settle and how, what sort of hand-wringing is going to happen, and post-mortem will happen in the lead up to that. It's going to be fascinating to watch. Dan, as always, thank you so much. We know we had all sorts of shit show of technical issues today. Thank you for suffering through it with us. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys. It's great to see you always.
Thanks, Dan. Great to see you as well. All right. Coming up,
we're going to talk about whether or not a ceasefire with Russia, a peace deal with Russia, is just a pipe dream at this point. Jim Jottris is a former State Department advisor, and he says, yeah, that Putin's done. He's just going to win the war. We're just going to sit back and watch. So we're going to talk about that in a second. But first, Clayton will tell you about our friends over at Bearskin, because it's getting chilly out.
It is indeed getting chilly out. You guys have heard about the Bearskin hoodie, right? Well, smart people are locking in their gear right now. I've got mine right here. Here's my Bearskin hoodie. I wear it every day to walk the dog. We have cold mornings here in the Rocky Mountains, and then it gets like 70 degrees by the afternoon. So it's like a layering state. So I have my really awesome hoodie here from Bearskin that I wear every day. You can have the removable patches you can put on the side. This thing is like a tank. And it is 340 GSM micro fleece, 10 pockets, clean, rugged fit that looks awesome. Plus it zips right into your heavy storm rain jacket to become 100% waterproof when you need it. So when it turns cold, wet, and windy, you're not scrambling last minute. You'll get free U.S. shipping, fast delivery, and you've locked in your winter gear already. That's a win-win. Get it for a loved one for the holidays, you know? So do yourself a favor. Text the word redacted to 36912 to lock in your 60% off. Again, text the word redacted to 36912. You get a link sent straight to your phone so you can check it out later if you're busy right now. One more thing, by the way, when you support Bearskin, you're also supporting the Fallen Outdoors and the Hope for the Warriors Veterans Program. So you're not buying great gear. You're just also, you're backing a cause that matters. So don't wait till you're freezing to realize your hoodie sucks. Get a Bearskin right now while it's 60% off. Text the word redacted to 36912.
Well, it's too late for a peace treaty with Russia. The jig is up. This ship has sailed. The book is closed. What, Clayton, you want to add any? The fat lady has sung.
Yes, the fat lady has sung. Exactly.
Okay. Well, that's what Jim Jottris said. He's a former State Department diplomat and an expert on U.S.-Russian relations. He is also, I want to point out, an original gangster for independent thinkers. He sent me this photo this week, and I had to show it off. This is Jim and two non-interventionalist America First pioneers, Ron Paul and Pat Buchanan. So he knows that of which he speaks when he speaks of foreign intervention, and he's here to warn us. Jim, do you have any other idioms you want to, the pants are fallen, the laundry's done. I don't know. Let's just keep going.
Okay, let's stop with the pants right there. First off, I want to commend you guys for the great tribute you did to Pat Buchanan the other day. That was just really magnificent. I mean, one of the greatest Americans I've ever had the honor of meeting, and you guys really hit the nail on the head. So I really appreciate that. Back to the pants. I wouldn't say it's too late for a peace deal. I would say there never was any prospect for a peace deal. That if you look at how dysfunctional the American government is, even if Trump really wanted to make a deal with the Russians, I don't think it could be implemented. I don't think he could make the American government do what he wants it to do. And even if he managed to do that for the balance of his term, it would not be honored in the long term. And I think the Russians don't want to admit that to themselves. They haven't wanted to all along. Oh, they went to Anchorage. They presented some proposals. Trump seemed to agree with them. And it didn't even last until the end of the meeting before Trump had walked it all back. I think the Russians are starting to figure that out. The question is, what do they do with it? We have this unfortunate upward spiral of escalation where the one side, the Western side, that doesn't hold any cards, keeps throwing more chips in and raising the stakes and escalating. And the other side that holds all the cards doesn't want to call, doesn't want to actually finish the war militarily, would rather the other side fold. So they'll keep incrementally raising the heat, taking more Ukrainian territory, killing more Ukrainian soldiers, and then saying, okay, now will you face reality? Will you now fold your cards? And we're not going to do that. So I think we've got this really this cycle that there's no way to escape from. It's going to keep escalating until one or two things happen, it seems to me. Either the Russians decide that there is not going to be any deal, that they actually go for the jugular, take out the Kiev regime, kill off the presidential administration, the Rada, the military intelligence, the secret police, and so forth, essentially liquidate the Ukrainian state, or somebody crosses a line somewhere that nobody expected, and this thing becomes a direct conflict between NATO and Russia. I don't know which of those two things is going to happen, but those are the only two paths I see at this point.
And what is so Putin in all of this right now? I know one of the notes you had sent over earlier is, and you think one of the upshots here is this is going to continue to escalate at a time when war with Venezuela is looming, and then God knows Nigeria, whatever else we're like, whatever sure. boondoggle we're going into right now. So Putin's got to be sitting there saying, man, the U.S. has no Tomahawk missiles left. They've completely like almost like dried themselves up right now. The Europeans, I mean, God knows what a disaster they are at this point. And so the lines that we think Ukraine exists at this point, where Odessa is still part of Ukraine, mm-hmm. where these other areas are still part of Ukraine. I mean, we're talking about Ukraine not being a country very soon if this continues. Am I seeing it wrong?
Well, I think it's a little premature because remember, the Russians control about one fifth of the territory of pre-war Ukraine. So they're a long way, at least on a territorial basis, from saying Ukraine will not be a state anymore. The question is when the Ukrainian army crumbles, which it may do at some point, what do they do with that? Do they come back and renew their demands from really June of last year, which are actually fairly minimal? You get out of the four oblasts that the Russians claim as Russian territory now, agree to neutrality, demilitarization, denazification, and at that point, they'll agree to a ceasefire. I keep asking myself, what would happen if the West actually accepted those terms? You would end up essentially with not the West winning, but the West not losing either. You end up with a Korea kind of situation where you have a demilitarized zone between a Russian zone and a NATO zone and a permanent frozen conflict, which is what the Russians say they want to avoid. So I think that's kind of the trap that the West would like the Russians to fall into. Unfortunately, they can't even spring their own trap. They can't even offer enough of an incentive for the Russians to bite. Now, maybe when the Russians complete taking control of all the rest of the Donbas, the line between a ceasefire line and what their constitutional demands are really has evaporated. In the meantime, as I say, we're going to see escalation. And we're going to see more deep strikes into Russian territory that the Russians threaten severe consequences for, but they never do anything about because they're afraid, not afraid, but they don't want to see escalation. Nonetheless, that invites a perception of weakness and further escalation, which I think they're aware of, but they're not. They themselves don't know quite how to jump out of that box without doing something they think would raise the stakes considerably. And of course, the other thing you mentioned is Venezuela. I think we're increasingly seeing now, I don't think the war with Iran is over yet between the U.S. and Israel against Iran. We're about to go into Venezuela by all indications. I think the separate theaters of what is essentially a conflict between the global American empire, the GAE as I call it, and the Eurasian bloc is increasingly becoming a single global conflict with several theaters that are starting to interconnect.
Let's refer to the map because Russian state media, RIA, has continued to, they have this update mm-hmm. this map every day. What we're looking at right now is the red part is what was formerly Eastern Ukraine and is now controlled by Russia. They voted, those people voted there to join Russia. They asked Russia to come in. The dark gray line there is where Russia defines the end of the war. And we right. have been watching this for now 3 years, and we watch as that red just bleeds to the left. Do you think that Russia is going to hit the end of that dark gray line and stop? Do you think that they're good for it? Because there had been rumblings that they would continue to Odessa, and then Ukraine has really no portland, no, they've taken all the mining of the precious metals, like, then what? Do we take this map at its word? Because I've been watching it for years.
Yeah, that's the question, Natalie, because remember, the Russians have always said that the territorial question is not the most important one for them. Yes, the four oblasts that you point to are constitutionally, from Moscow's point of view, part of Russian territory, but their other demands are demilitarization, denazification, and permanent neutral status for Ukraine. How do they accomplish those things if their forces don't go beyond the gray area that you pointed to on the map? How do they enforce that if there's still a Ukrainian state that's outside of their control that is essentially an ally of NATO? I don't see how they do that. Now, sometimes you hear people talking about binding treaty guarantees. What is the worth of a signature of the United States on a document these days?
Right.
Can you trust it to be honored?
Right. Yeah, I mean, look at the Minsk agreements. We go
and smack people in Qatar when we're busy negotiating with them. You know, I mean, there's simply no, not only no trust on the part of the Russian side, but no reason to trust us that even if an agreement were made addressing these other points, it wouldn't be worth the paper it's written on. So I think that's the dilemma for the Russians. So I don't know what they will do once they get to that line.
I guess one yes or no answer here, Jim, on this, because I got a follow up. Sure. Does Russia hold all the cards?
Yeah. Yeah. Militarily, they do. Yes.
So no, if Russia holds all the cards, then what does Russia want? What does Russia want to end this thing if they hold all the cards?
What they want, what they want is the terms they've reiterated over and over again. Demilitarization, denazification, neutrality, the four oblasts plus Crimea. The question is how can they secure that in a way that actually they can trust? And I don't think they know the answer to that. They would rather have an agreement. They want us to fold our cards. We're not going to do that. You know, let's remember, Clayton, at the beginning of this war, and really wasn't the beginning, let's say the beginning of this phase of the war in February 2022, the plan A was for the Russians to come in shock and awe, destroy the Ukrainian state, occupy all of Ukraine, and then we could bleed them white in kind of an Afghanistan-style scenario. That's obviously not what they planned. They plan to come in, they'll show, make a show of force. The other side will say, oh my goodness, I guess the Russians are serious. We better agree to their terms. Well, that didn't happen, and I don't think it's going to happen. So I think that's where the dilemma is for them. They may have to occupy a lot more of Ukraine, maybe all of Ukraine, in order to make sure that their other goals, not just the territorial ones, but the denazification, demilitarization, and so forth, are accepted. But they really, really don't want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, to try to have to rule. It's already the largest country in the world, right? Do they want to rule more land? And then do they want to rule a group of individuals who don't want to be ruled by them? But how difficult is it to try to root out Nazis? I mean, they're so ensconced in that government. I don't know. I don't. Yeah, there's got to be some sort of agreement. I don't know how in the world
it would be a formidable task. Honestly, Clayton, I don't think it's as bad as it might look on the outside. Let's remember, except for the far, far west of Ukraine, all of Ukraine was either part of the Soviet Union or before that part of the Russian Empire. And I've talked to people from all over Ukraine, and a lot of them are anything but nationalists. You know, they basically will play the game. Well, you know, the nationalists here, the Banderas are here, whatever they want. We just want a peaceful life. We'll agree with them. What happens when the Russian comes? Well, whatever the thing, same thing. Whatever they want, we'll go along with it. We just want to have a peaceful life. I think actually the prospect of an Afghanistan-like insurgency in Ukraine, if the Russians had to take far, far more than they're demanding, is a lot less than people think. But obviously it's a risk.
Interesting. No, yeah. I think that's a great point. People just want to live a peaceful life. And you might have the Banderites and you might have these Nazis in there, but it might not be as bad
as people think. Well, I mean, imagine. The war's over. You're not going to be kidnapped to war. And also, we have an economy where our grocery stores are full. So, I don't know. That's pretty good deal for Ukrainians at this point.
And of course, the other alternative is the Russians take whatever they decide to take, and then they set up another Ukrainian state, a kind of a rump state, which is essentially a puppet state of Russia. It becomes like another Belarus, where it's closely tied to Russia. It's not truly an independent state, just like our allies aren't truly independent states. Sure. And that is the future of Ukraine at that point. That also may be quite workable. I don't know to what extent they have that in mind.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim, for your patience, for coming on the show. It's always great to see you, to hear from you. Please come back soon.
Thanks, Jim. Great to see
you. Likewise. Thank you so much.
All right. Coming up, I want to talk about this new study. JAMA, the Journal of American Pediatrics, is admitting that suicide prevention for young people does not work. So maybe they should leave our kids the F alone. That's not what they're saying they're going to do. They're admitting what they're doing is not working, so they need to do more. But we parents are hip to that, so stay with us. And we're going to have a hate session about mental health and all of that stuff. You're going to enjoy it. I think I will anyway. So stick around for that. But first.
Yeah. Also, then we're going to talk about Ben Shapiro and Tucker Carlson coming up here in a few moments. But first, you know what this is? I've got to show you something I've been using lately. Really impressed by this. It is called the Stop Box. Okay. Here's the deal. If you own a firearm in your house and you want it for self-defense in your house, that means getting it quickly. You need to balance safety and accessibility. You certainly don't want kids getting into it, but you also, in the middle of the night, if someone breaks into your house, you want to be able to get to it quickly. You don't need power outages, like causing your biometric readings and all of that failing, hitting it or you get a false positive because you used the wrong finger to press the thing. That's where Stopbox comes in. It is incredible. This thing gives you instant access without keys, without codes, without batteries. It's 100% a mechanical lockbox. So just right here on the side, you just put your fingers based on your code right here. I can't do it on this side. You just press the hand. Press it. Maybe better to show the video because I'm kind of messing it up here. A little hard to hold it in one hand with a microphone in my hands. But that's what happens. It has a patented 5-button design system that responds only to your unique input. It's quick, intuitive, built for muscle memory. So when stress hits, you're not fumbling with electronics or combinations or power outages or anything else. I personally love how sturdy this thing feels too, and has got nice little rubber slip things on the bottom. So like on your countertop, or if you have it on your bedside table and you're trying to unlock it, like, because you should test it. And it even says right on the card that it comes with, just practice. It takes practice. Right here on the card, it says inside the box, it takes practice right there. So just get used to it. Play with it a little bit and you'll be ready to go. Right now, for a limited time, my listeners get 15% off your entire order at stopboxusa.com when you use our code redacted at checkout. Again, that's stopboxusa.com. Use the promo code redacted to get 15% off. And by the way, if they ask you where you heard about us, just tell them you heard about them from Redacted. I want to say, I saw Stopbox for the first time like a year ago, had nothing to do with our show at all. And I was like, oh my God, I got to get me one of those. Made in the USA. Fantastic. Don't have to worry about power outages, anything like that. Be able to just click it, open it, and ready to go. And I was super impressed. And then they reached out. They said, hey, we like your show. We'd like to sponsor your show. We'd like to be a part of it. And I said, are you kidding me? Like, yes. I love when like the alignment happens, you know, and that happens a lot here on the show. So thanks to Stopbox for supporting Redacted. We appreciate it.
Well, a new study shows that suicide prevention for young people does not work. This disturbing truth, though, behind this that they do not admit is that mental health professionals never had any proof that they did. So all of this stuff we see saturated in young people, suicide hotlines, suicide prevention, suicide education, they never had any data that any of it would work. Meaning they've been experimenting on children in real time, all the while the suicide rate has gone up for young people. Now, if you're a parent of school-age kids, you know this, that kids hear about suicide all the time these days, all the time. It's not just in school, but other places too. My son, he joined a swim team, and they said, oh, this year we have a mental health coach to go along with the swim team. I looked at the permission slip and it said that this person would call the authorities if they thought that there was something, that some flag in my son, that they would bring in other people. I was like, no, thank you. Absolutely not. We're not having other people talk to him about mental health and suicide prevention. My daughter, I took her to the doctor because she had pneumonia. I said, I checked in online. They said, oh, well, this form is for her. I looked at it, 3 questions. 1, have you ever attempted to hurt yourself? Have you ever thought about suicide? And 3, have you ever thought about violently hurting your family or friends? And I said, absolutely not. I handed the clipboard right back. She will not be filling this out. And this practice needs to do the research about social contagion of suicide and violence. It was just a receptionist. She looked at me with wide eyes and just took it back. I was furious, but suicide talk is everywhere, you guys, for young people, everywhere. How can you constantly tell children that some people deal with pain by killing themselves and then think that you are preventing it? Maybe people working in the suicide industry are well-meant, but for all their focus on suicide, they really only get part of it. According to a 2022 New Yorker piece, the rates of teen suicide have doubled from 2007 to 2017, incidentally, when it became commonplace to talk about it. But suicide, like every other mental condition, has an element of social contagion. And psychologists have known this for decades, and they ignore the data. Anything, PTSD, you get more of it. Bulimia, anorexia, transgenderism, we've seen that happen right before our very eyes. Incidentally, reporters know this too. My first job was a reporter in the San Francisco Bay Area. Every newspaper and media outlet in the San Francisco Bay Area has a rule against covering Golden Gate Bridge. So suicides. We just don't do it because we know that it romanticizes it to a point where we get more. Here's how Abigail Schreier puts it in her book, Bad Therapy, that the virality of suicide and self-harm is well established. Study after study has shown that media reports of suicide increases incidents. And in fact, since the 80s, there was a study in Austria that proved just that. And yet we put this on our children over and over again. Here's one study she found that is currently given out to children in Delaware. It says the next three questions will be asking you about attempted suicide. And the question says, sometimes people feel so depressed about the future that they may consider attempting suicide or killing themselves. That's suggestive. That showing them, like, if you feel bad, this is how some people deal with it. Maybe they would never have otherwise considered that. They are absolutely saturated. Nobody studied the effectiveness or the danger of giving that to kids. They just did it. They just experimented on those kids. So we have a right to be mad. What the JAMA study does not show, though, is that... Actually, I'm jumping ahead of myself. What the JAMA study does show is that none of this helps. They analyzed cognitive behavior therapy, social-based prevention programs, medication, crisis lines, gatekeeper training. None of these showed any reduction in suicide rates in teens or young adults. And again, they were never proven that they did. Adults just sort of wiggled their way in and started trying this shit out. Now, another link that the article ignores besides contagion is antidepressant drugs, or SSRIs. For many of them, the known side effect is suicidality. It's on the label. So maybe, do you think that that's working against you, given how many kids now are put on antidepressants and the suicide rates are up? The article ignores that. It's crazy. Just this week, HHS Secretary RFK Jr. said that the government is going to be looking at that. He says the CDC is finally going to confront this issue about whether SSRIs and other psychoactive drugs contribute to mass violence and violence against yourself, suicide as well. You should watch the video that's here. I'm only going to show you the first 20 seconds from a 1991 FDA hearing on the matter. This is not new.
The topic for today's advisory committee meeting is the possibility of a causal linkage between the emergence and or intensification of suicidal thoughts and acts, suicidality that is, and or other violent behaviors and the use of antidepressant drugs.
Now, another thing that we've seen in our community happen is that this suicide education puts a heavy emphasis on recognizing it in your friends. If you see something in your friend, tell on them, tell an adult, report it. The problem is when you put this emphasis on policing, then if this happens in your community, the surviving members feel guilt. And in fact, this happened in my son's freshman year. There was a girl who took her life. She was on the cheer team. And then almost all of the cheerleaders were on suicide watch because they felt like they had missed it. They felt like it was their problem that they didn't catch it because for so many years, education had been telling them to catch this in your friends. You should not put this on children. It's the adults that should own this stuff, not their peers. Full stop. But think about it. This also gives the government now the power to analyze and track these kids under the guise of mental health. And something Philip has said many times on this show, that the law of the land allows you to refuse medical treatment. It does not allow you to refuse mental health treatment. So if the government thinks that you are a mental health risk, you belong to them. That's why I tell my children all the time, no school surveys. No conversations about mental health in school, nothing that can give the school the power to track you, put something on a record that will stay on your record your whole life, nothing. Not even like how often does your family eat dinner together? Do your parents help with homework? Nothing. It is La Casa Nostra in this house. And I think that you should tell your kids the same. Now back to that JAMA study showing that suicide prevention does not work. What the authors conclude is that they need novel developmentally and trauma-informed treatments and multi-level interventions. I don't know what the hell this is. What does this mean? They've just admitted that they failed, and now they're saying we're going to try some other weird shit. My what my vote would be is that the people who failed to stop suicide and may have made it worse should not be the ones to come up with what comes next, especially if they're ignoring social contagion and antidepressants as a cause. So F those people is what I want to say. Let me know what you think of this. It's a very sensitive topic, and I'm furious at how we failed these people by just experimenting on them.
It's awful. All right. F these people.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
That's how I feel.
All right. Coming up, we're going to talk about Ben Shapiro versus Tucker Carlson. Finally, the gloves are off. Ben Shapiro decided to devote his entire show to it and against Nick Fuentes as well. There's this massive rift right now in the conservative movement. Those like Ben Shapiro, Mark Levin, and so forth, who want to put Israel first and, of course, are blaming anybody who wants to put America first, who wants to stand up and make sure that our money is repatriated here at home inside the United States, we're not funding foreign wars, that we are somehow anti-Semitic. We heard that from them. They used the term anti-Semitic to describe America first. So America first is now anti-Semitic. Screw you. We're going to talk all about that in a second. But first, if you've been seriously injured, your case could be worth millions, and you should know exactly what your rights are. That's why I want to tell you about Morgan & Morgan. They're America's largest injury law firm with over 1,000 attorneys working in all 50 states. And unlike a lot of firms that settle quickly, Morgan & Morgan doesn't take lowball offers from insurance companies. Just in the past few months, they won $12 million in Florida when the insurance company offered only $350,000. And in New York, they secured $6.8 million on a case where the offer was just $275,000. And the best part? It's absolutely free unless you win. Insurance companies try to pay out as little as possible. Morgan & Morgan fights to get you more if you become their client. It only takes a few minutes to see if you have a case, and you can do it right from your phone. It's that easy. You can visit forthepeople.com/redacted, or you can click the link in the description to get started. Well, the gloves are now off between Tucker Carlson and Ben Shapiro, if they were really ever on over the past few months. I've been waiting for Tucker to finally wipe the floor with the Israel first Jew, Ben Shapiro, the man who says that he would gladly waive the born in the USA requirement for the presidency of Benjamin Netanyahu in the United States to become president of the United States. You want a literal demon running our executive branch of our government? Satan incarnate? The guy is literally Satan incarnate. You want that guy leading our country? Okay. Disgusting. Okay. Get the hell out of here. So Ben Shapiro, who said we should stop asking questions about the Epstein files that happened a long time ago, so don't ask any more questions. And oh, by the way, I believe the government's official line on it, so stop asking questions about it. Don't look into the Epstein ties to Israel at all. Just keep, look away from all of that. Look the other way. Yes, the same Ben Shapiro is now in full damage control. Turns out, a lot of people don't want to watch the Daily Wire anymore. That's kind of shocking. No wonder that his company is laying off a bunch of people as their views dried up. All of that investor money that propped him up is now rearing its ugly head. They've lost the ability to manufacture narratives, control public opinions. We're done with you. And eagle-eye Twitter observers, by the way, have noticed something really phony about Daily Wire content, like the amount of likes to view ratio is really weird and off. Like, it doesn't make sense. Why are these like fake views, they're wondering? It's a good question. The math doesn't add up. Millions of people watching the videos and very few likes. It's kind of weird. Where are all those views coming from, by the way? Hope it's not a bot. Hope it's like not a bot farm somewhere, because that would be pretty shady. And I'm sure the investors probably wouldn't like that. It'd be interesting to look into that. They probably won't make investors happy. So anyway, so a few years ago, Ben Shapiro wouldn't even say Nick Fuentes' name. He would talk around his name, but he can't avoid it now because conservatives like Nick and Tucker, who are America first, are now winning. So he has to use their names now, Ben Shapiro does. Shapiro finally addresses it. Make sure you buy his book, which is right there in the shot. Taking on Nick and Tucker by name. Spent a whole show doing it, saying that he will not allow the conservative movement to fall into their hands. And he devoted the whole show to talking down to America first conservatives like he's some kind of conservative gatekeeper. Watch.
Sir, is no. No to the Groypers. No to their publicists like Tucker Carlson. No to those who champion them. No to demoralization. No to bigotry and anti-meritocratic horseshit. No to anti-Americanism. No. This is our country. This is our party. And this is our conservative movement. And I will not stand by while it is handed over to those who betray the most fundamental principles I have spent my entire life defending and advocating. That is a path to defeat and a path to moral oblivion. I reject it because if we lose the right, we will lose to the left. And either way, we'll lose the country. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show.
So this is our America. This is, who is our, by the way? Like, who are these people that you're saying the country belongs to me? Like, who is this our? Who's this collective our that you're talking about? What do you mean by that exactly? Sorry, pal, a little too late. And what's hilarious, as Nick pointed out, Shapiro did this whole show with no ads, meaning he knows how seriously the Daily Wire is in trouble here. He did the whole show, no ads, just to do this particular segment. Listen to Nick.
But today, it was a clip show. Today, it was like a full-fledged Fuentes Updates clip show. It was like America's Funniest Videos, one clip after the other. 40 minutes, no ads. That's how you know they mean business. When Ben Shapiro turns down the money from the advertisers, when Ben Shapiro doesn't do, let's say, 50 ad reads in a 50-minute video, that's how you know they mean business. He will literally do an ad read at a pro-life march. In person, he will give a speech in real life at a pro-life march about abortion, and he will stop and do an ad read for ZipRecruiter. But when you're talking about anti-Semitism, there's simply no time. There's no time. We mean business, because this is something we really care about. No ads. 40-minute video. And about 50% of it was just my clips. Fuentes says, Fuentes that, he's a Nazi, sexist, Holocaust denier. Whoa, you're sounding like, you're giving me like Bill Maher, Rachel Maddow. What is this? I thought Shapiro was against SJWs. Now he sounds like one of them. I thought he was against liberal.
So. He says Bill Maher, like it's not his generation. He doesn't even have to know who Bill Maher is.
Yeah,
I kind of love Bill that. Maher. Who yeah. gives a shit?
So, yeah. Fuentes and Tucker both hit on this violence theme. And I think it hits at the core of it and the core of the argument here, which is you get to lecture Tucker. You get to lecture Nick Fuentes about violence. You get to look down your nose when about 2 million people are being killed. Babies are being shot. Listen to Nick talk about the violence hypocrisy.
So I get called a Nazi. They tell me they're going to neutralize me. They say that I'm vermin, and that's fine because there's no accountability for Jewish people at all. As long as you're Jewish, as long as you support Israel, everyone knows there's no accountability. You can say whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. You can say about the Palestinians, kill them all. And that's fine. You can say kill 2 million people and you're fine. You're not genocidal. You're not a racial supremacist. You're not violent because you're Jewish and you're pro-Israel. And God knows you can't criticize God's chosen people. Josh Hammer can say Tucker Carlson should be neutralized like an animal. And that's fine. No one's going to criticize that. That's not violent. That doesn't tend towards anything bad because he's a pro-Israel Jew. So there's no accountability. You can, like Mark Levin, say, these people are vermin. They're our enemy. They're anti-American. Once again, you're fine. You could be Lindsey Graham and say, we're killing everyone we want. We ran out of bombs. But if you say America shouldn't support Israel, now you're the irredeemable, reprehensible, anti-Semitic, Holocaust denier, and it's violent. Stop. Just stop. Just stop. Just stop the cap. No one's buying that anymore.
The cap.
Stop the cap.
something my daughter says, Cap. Tucker, though, on Dave Smith's show, didn't hold back anymore, specifically on the violence piece of this, because this is at the heart of it for, I think, like young people across the board. The genocide, the killing of innocent people, the using the United States to do it, using American tax dollars to do it. You want to say you're America first? He said, screw you. You're not America first. You love violence and war, and you want Americans to feel guilted into supporting your bullshit. And we're over it. You're openly pro-violence, and you're openly pro-killing children in a genocide. We're done. Listen.
People like Ben Shapiro and Josh Hammer and Ted Cruz, you know, all these people, like, they think in terms of groups. And that's what Levin said to me. It's like, my group, people are hurting my group. And it's like, if your group means your family, you know, people you love, I get it. But if you're thinking purely in terms of your ethnic group, which is what he is saying, then you inevitably become very hateful toward other ethnic groups, actually. Yeah. And in Ben's line about Ron Paul, who's like totally committed to nonviolence, by the way, you see that hatred. And so it does. I don't like it. I'll just get right to it. I'm not afraid personally. I didn't grow up like in the world that, you know, Seth Dillon grew up in, where you were encouraged, like, talk about yourself all the time. Like, narcissism was a true sin. I never talk about it. I try not to talk about myself in general, but I mean, I know a lot about, you know, people trying to hurt me, been there in a real way. And which I've never talked about, not going to talk about now, but I'll just say, I like know what that is. And I know that, you know, people like Seth Dillon or Ben Shapiro, you know, they get a lot out of wearing bulletproof vests and like, oh, I'm so under attack and all this stuff. And it's like, the truth is they are openly pro-violence. So how in the world could you justify killing tens of thousands of children or justify a pager attack, which is an act of terrorism where you indiscriminately blowing people's genitals off? You don't know who's holding the pager, and you're celebrating it. What are you celebrating? You're celebrating violence, and they celebrate violence day after day. That's where their foreign policy comes from. That's where their worldview is. Strangling the neck of a Jew, who even thinks that way? Someone who's thinking very often in violent terms, and so and hateful terms. That's hate. And so people like that, when aroused to hysteria, and I feel sorry for them, and I just want to say that again. Lindsey Graham, another violence worshiper, like, the idea that they're promoting violence, well, they've been promoting violence for decades because this whole project is about violence. It's about the thrill that they feel killing their enemies, the godlike power they imagine they have when they extinguish human life. That's the whole game for them. And we shouldn't like, so, oh, you're not promoting violence? Oh, you're definitely promoting violence. And that's why I oppose you.
And that's it. That's at the heart of it. Shapiro and Levin and these clowns realize that their group is losing power fast. Americans have had enough. We're sick and tired of you lecturing us, telling us that conservatives can't be America first because that's somehow anti-Semitic.
And even the most wimpy of them are saying, Lindsey Graham over the weekend saying, if you don't want to put Israel first and you want to be a Republican, we'll beat your brains out. Like, we're afraid of Lindsey Graham. Like, I think my 13-year-old could defend themselves.
My 9-year-old girl
could
take Lindsey Graham.
But he's saying he'll beat your brains out. Like, he's an old man. And that's violent speech. So, I mean, I don't think we've ever said on this show, and we shouldn't, and if we have, we should take it back. If you don't agree with me, I will beat you up. I wish you harm. That's not... Who do they think they are talking to people like that? This is an elected person. And if you vote for him, I have to know why. I have to. The Lindsey Grahams of the world. I'm sorry I interrupted, but this, like, wimpy people making threats is only scary because of the money and the army that we know are behind them.
Well, and if you say, you know, you don't want to send billions of dollars to a corrupt government in Israel, that you're somehow anti-Semitic, screw you. We're just done with your bullshit. Just because you support the shooting of babies in the head by IDF snipers who are on the record admitting they do it, you can whitewash it and walk away and say that they're future terrorists. We got to shoot babies in the head. Okay. Just because you support the murder of Christians in Gaza, you don't mind when the Israeli government destroys Christian churches. That's totally fine with you. Just because you support this violence and genocide doesn't mean I have to. I don't work hard every day to send my tax dollars to Israel so babies can be killed. It's not what I signed up for. By the way, if you ask any young person, just go around and ask any young person, hey, by the way, do you support American tax dollars being used to weaponize the IDF, the Israeli soldiers, and shooting people, in women and children in the head? You down with that? We've had it with your insults. We're done. So way to go, Tucker, and way to go, Nick. By the way, Dave Smith posted this after the interview. He said, so all of the worst people in the country gathered together to attack the great Tucker Carlson. I'll be doing a show about it tomorrow. It's going to be a big one. But for now, I'll just say this. You will cancel Tucker Carlson over all of our dead effing bodies. You war-thirsty scumbags have ruined everything for 25 years at least, and you will never kill the awakening of the American people, which is way overdue. I challenge all of you to debate this topic. I mean, all of you. Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, Randy Fine, Mark Levin, whoever else you want to bring against little old non-expert me. I'll wreck all of you. But unfortunately, we all know that you're all too much of a pussy to accept. Not a single one of you are man enough to defend your ideas. Dave Smith. Americans are sick and tired of being insulted with you, and it's over. So that's all I want to say about that. But I just was glad that, you know, people are like, oh, Tucker finally pulled his gloves off. He did in a way, but I mean, months and months ago on the Piers Morgan show, he called out Ben Shapiro's like bloodlust. And then Ben Shapiro tried to like defend it and say, that's not what he meant. Mm-hmm. And he was really talking about the civilian to terrorist ratio. And Israel has the best killing ratio, like meaning the fewest civilians to terrorists get killed. Yeah. He's like, I love that. I love that we have the best ratio. We kill a few babies when we shoot them directly in the head, but we're totally fine to kill these terrorists, you know, because we got the great ratio together. We have the best ratio in history.
Well, according to them, 1.5 civilians for every combatant is an acceptable ratio. They think that that's Israel being extremely careful with civilian lives. The problem is that Israel never is able to defend who they call a combatant, and that they have adopted an Obama-era policy that any male of military age is a combatant without having to prove it. That's why Obama droned so many civilians and got away with it, because he was able to call them combatants. So yeah, that's what they say. And again, this is the conservative kill number that Zionists are saying is acceptable, is 1.5 civilians to every combatant. And we can't even trust the coefficient. We don't know, right? Because they can call anybody a combatant. So I guess that's fine with them.
Well, and the thing is also that the only thing they have is to resort to calling people anti-Semites, because if you try to argue with them on any point, anything that Israel's doing, the annexation, the genocide, the soldiers doing what they're doing, they have no argument for anything. So name-calling is all they've got.
Right, and we played the Orthodox Jews in New York City who voted overwhelmingly for Mamdani, a Muslim.
Yeah.
Well, these Jews are like, we don't support the genocide in Israel. And by the way, we don't want the mayor of our city kowtowing to Israel. Like, we are Jews and we don't want this. And we will, but they use this like cloak of anti-Semitism. You're an anti-Semite. The word has lost all of its meaning now. Way to go, yeah. Netanyahu.
Well, I've been reading Norm Finkelstein's book, who incidentally was on Candace Owens last weekend. I picked up the book before then. And what he says, and he is the survivor of two Auschwitz parents, what he says is that when the State of Israel was instated, American Jews were worried that exactly this would happen, that the perception would be that their loyalty is more to Israel than America, and they very much wanted to assimilate. They did not want this to show their loyalty to a foreign government. How that happened is a PR manipulation. This is not originally what they wanted to do. It was a constant programming of the next generation that you are the children of victims and you have this cross to bear. And I mean, a lot of us are the children of victims of World War II. I think I've said on this show that my grandfather survived the Imperial Japanese. That puts me the same. I'm the same. In fact, the Imperial Japanese killed more people than the Nazis killed Jews. And so I was looking this weekend coming up, the Globe and Mail just had an article about how this upcoming Nuremberg movie starring Russell Crowe is more needed now than ever. Why do you think they would say that? Do we need a movie about the Imperial Japanese? For what purpose? Because there's no purpose now to label China as the victims. Why they need it is to tap into your programming that Jews are the victims perpetually more than other groups, which I've just proven to you they are not. in order to sell you this war. And so I just found that so odious, the way that they, like, sure, Russell Crowe, do a Nuremberg movie. Absolutely do that. But the way the media is saying you must watch this right now, it's more needed than ever, is interesting because they never say that about the Asians, that you need to watch this to see what the Imperial Japanese did to us in order to what? There's no sell there. That's what I'm trying to say.
Anthony Goodley in our chat says, America has a massive deficit while Israel has a surplus. They do. They also have a space force. They have a budget surplus. And Anthony says, why the F do we send them a single dime while our own people are homeless and going hungry in the United States? Great question, Anthony. I wish we had the answer to that. Thomas Massey feels the same way about you. But anyone who questions it is labeled an anti-Semite. How dare you ask that question? But when you ask that question about why are we sending money to Ghana, or why are we sending money for circumcisions in whatever part of Africa, that's okay and that's funny. And yeah, we got to cut that right away. We got to get rid of that spending. But why are we sending money to a country that has a budget surplus and a space force? It's ridiculous. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, we got through the show today. Thank you for sticking with us. If you were with us earlier, we had some technical difficulties. We got through it, and we appreciate that you stick with us and that your great comments, fantastic comments. So we will be here tomorrow, same time, 4 p.m. Eastern time. Before we go, though, we want to tell you about our friends at perplexity.ai because they have a new Comet browser. What if your browser actually worked for you? Not tracking you, not selling you, just helping you think. Well, that's the idea behind Comet. It's a new browser by Perplexity AI. Comet isn't built by an ad company pretending to care about privacy. It's built by engineers who believe that the web should be useful, verifiable, and private. So it is AI embedded in every website that you go to help you, whatever it is that you want to do. It can help decide if you're booking a trip. Can you make this flight? Would you be able to make this concert if you bought these tickets? But while it's helping you to do research, do your normal tasks, manage your family, it is also not harvesting your data, no manipulative algorithms. It's just you, search, and help. So try them out. Go to pplx.ai/redacted and download their browser. Give it a try. See if it works for you. Again, it's the Comet browser. Plus, right now, you can get a month of Rumble Premium for free with your download. So head on over to pplx.ai/redacted. Again, it's the Comet browser, pplx.ai/redacted.
All right. Thank you, guys. Yeah, we had all sorts of technical issues today on the show, so we appreciate you sticking with us here, and whether it was on X or Rumble. Normally, we have a lot more viewers on Rumble today, but because of our technical issues, people couldn't find the stream. So we apologize if you there's a few of you that found us over on Rumble, but normally we have tens of thousands of you. So we appreciate your patience, but we have many thousands of you over on YouTube, so you managed to find the stream once
again.
Thank
you so much.
Thank you, guys, for joining us today. And yeah, we'll be back at 4 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow. Hopefully we'll be live at that time, and hopefully we'll have all these kinks worked out. So we'll see you guys tomorrow live at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Have a great night, everyone.